shooting at a commercial cargo ship is really like shooting at the world. You know, shipping is the most international of businesses. And these ships, they carry consumer goods, food, medical supplies, spare parts of thousands of importers and exporters from all over the world.
The Bab el Mandeb Strait, which sits at the southern tip of the Red Sea, has become an increasingly dangerous choke point off the coast of Yemen after the rebel Houthi group began to target merchant and other ships there linked to Israel, the US or UK for attack or seizure. The group's stated motive is retribution for Israel's war in Gaza. The US and the UK have taken military action in response to the Houthi attacks, which have had a significant impact on global trade, as well as on delivery of humanitarian aid to Yemen. Escalating conflicts in the Middle East also look set to have further impact on the Red Sea situation. Charles Dunn, a non-resident fellow at the Arab Centre in Washington, D.C., speaks to the wider geopolitical and security situation in the Middle East.
The current Houthi assault on commercial shipping in the Red Sea, with an occasional attack on naval vessels also occurring, is clearly a byproduct of the war in Gaza and the regional reaction to that. Realistically, to me, a victory for whichever side we're talking about seems more like a stalemate than some kind of decisive win. I'm certain the United States would be content to see the Houthis end or dramatically scale back the attacks in international shipping, which Washington could then claim as a victory. And Iran and the Houthis might be content with having brought the so-called axis of resistance into the fight and maybe claiming credit for a ceasefire in Gaza or surviving U.S. attacks in Yemen. But that, to me, as I said, seems more like what will result from this rather than a decisive victory for either side. I would say the United States is in a holding pattern, precisely because of a lack of coherent strategy towards the current devolution of events in the Middle East. In other words, it's responding to immediate tactical challenges without a long-term, very clear political horizon or military endgames that it wants to pursue, whether it's in the Red Sea or anywhere else in the Middle East. This is, in fact, in my opinion, a recipe for further escalation down the road if United States opponents want to take advantage of it. And it could be very worrisome from Washington's point of view. U.S. military targets have been hit in Iraq. The United States and the U.K. have struck targets in Yemen. And Lebanon's Hezbollah, of course, has been involved in cross-border conflict with Israel. In fact, 80,000 Israeli citizens have been evacuated from the north due to fears of a widening conflict. So by my count, about 9 countries have so far been involved directly in this conflict, one way or the other. And Egypt and Jordan have also expressed, in my view, well-founded fears of mass expulsions of Palestinians from Gaza and the West Bank across their own borders, which could lead to a further escalation of the conflict. So it's very easy to imagine a widening of this war with more countries involved as the stakes become higher and the Gaza war wears on.
Jan Hoffman, Chief of Trade Logistics at the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development.
Shooting at a commercial cargo ship is really like shooting at the world. You know, shipping is the most international of businesses. Typical ship may be built in Korea, crewed by Filipino seafarers, recruited through a crewing agency in Cyprus, owned by a German investment fund, inspected by an Indian classification society, maybe registered, flagged under, say, Marshall Islands, insured in Norway, fueled at a bunkering station in Singapore, operated by a liner shipping company in Denmark or Switzerland. And these ships, they carry consumer goods, food, medical supplies, spare parts of thousands of importers and exporters from all over the world. Any idea of targeting a specific country when shooting at a ship is really, it's not only outrageous, it's terrorism. Seafarers have died. Innocent people have died for no reason whatsoever. For the Suez Canal, the most important client is the trade between Asia and Europe. Not just China, but also China, of course, and Mediterranean Europe. Again, from the country's perspective, it's the countries that are closer to the canal: Sudan, Yemen, Djibouti, Saudi Arabia, Seychelles, where between 20 and more than 30% of their trade volume goes normally through the canal. So the Suez Canal is particularly important for those countries. Egypt is, of course, also quite strongly affected. It loses revenue from the canal transits. It is a net food importer, and a lot of the imports into Egypt, which used to be at the crossroads, it was connecting east and west and north south in the transshipment centers close to the canal. Now Egypt is at the end of a road, of a cul-de-sac, of a dead end, meaning imports into Egypt from Asia have to come through the Mediterranean, passing by Gibraltar, going around South Africa. So this increases trade costs, and also Egyptian exporters now, of course, are much less well, much worse connected than before.
Wesley Wood is regional representative for the Middle East on the IBA's Maritime and Transport Law Committee and a partner at Al Tamimi and Company in Dubai.
The Red Sea is a vital maritime route connecting Europe, Asia, and the Middle East. Any disruptions caused by conflict or insecurity in the region can lead to delays and disruptions of a significant proportion of the world's shipment of goods. If continued, this can have far-reaching implications for global trade flows and supply chains. The presence of the Houthi rebels and the associated security risks could disrupt oil shipments through the Bab al-Mandeb Strait, leading to potential supply disruptions and fluctuations in global oil prices. Due to the increased risks associated with navigating through the Red Sea, insurance costs for vessels operating in the region have risen significantly. Insurers are adjusting their premiums to account for the heightened threat environment, which adds to the operational expenses for shipping companies, which is likely to ultimately be passed on to consumers. Some shipping companies are opting to avoid the Red Sea altogether and are taking longer alternative routes, primarily around the Cape of Good Hope, to mitigate the risks posed by the conflict. This can result in increased fuel costs and longer transit times, affecting the efficiency and profitability of maritime operations. Disputes have and will continue to arise between vessel owners and charterers in circumstances where charterers order a vessel to transit through the Red Sea. Questions inevitably arise as to whether or not the terms of the contract adequately address a scenario such as this, and owners will have to carefully consider their contractual rights and obligations under the charter party, whilst at the same time ensuring the safety of the crew and vessel. It is certainly an unusual conflict. A major issue is that without a formal declaration of war, various legal issues are left in a grey area, particularly from a contractual perspective. Whilst much of the conflict is being carried out at sea, it is customary international law, including inter alia, the United Nations Charter and the Geneva Convention, which will regulate the parties' actions, particularly those of the state actors involved.
Speaking before the escalation of hostilities between Iran and Israel in April 2024, Motaz Salama, researcher in the Gulf Studies Unit at the Cairo-based Al-Aram Center for Political and Strategic Studies, looks at the background to the attacks in the Red Sea and assesses the wider conflict between Iran and both the US and Israel. The confrontation between Iran and America, or between Iran and Israel, has become crystal clear. In fact, it has been going on for more than 5 years and includes confrontations in the Persian Gulf and sometimes in the Red Sea, attacks on ships, and continuous strikes into the heart of Iran. All this refers to the different tools of military confrontation being used by the two sides, the main characteristic of which is that they are well-engineered operations. They take place within the scope of understandings according to the rules of engagement, which are not written, but so far they are carried out within the minimum limits that the two sides can deal with and respond to. Iran retaliates against these strikes inside Iran through its proxies against Israel and America. Israel and the US can deal severe blows inside Iran and against Iran's proxies and some Iranian interests abroad. So far, the confrontation has been controlled, disciplined, and managed in a very complex and highly intelligent way on both sides. Could it expand to include direct war? All indications of a possible expansion of the war do exist. But I think that the two sides are facing two different paths. One is a direct confrontation with a major war in the region. This scenario, however, is prevented by many considerations, including related to the ability of a new Western alliance to enter into a major war with the aim of overthrowing Iranian rule. The other scenario would be limited to strikes on nuclear facilities. War scenarios are diverse and complex. I think that what has prevented America and Israel over the past years from carrying out a major war against Iran is also what may prevent them from fighting this war in the future, especially since continuing to launch strikes at the lowest level of operations has been the most beneficial so far, in my opinion, for Israel and for America.